JP reads for you. Today, Die Glocke by Kelsey Bowman. Die Glocke is German for the bell and is the story of the Nazi bell experiments. Come with us on a journey through time. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes, you are. Die Glocke by Kelsey Bowman. Chapter 20. The Walls Come Crumbling Down. Sporenberg stands outside the doorway of their bloodied interrogation cell. He's silent, arms folded with the right forearm reaching faceward, and his hand rubbing his chin. What is it, General? Wondering why the hell Seeger took off. He must have gone to get our spy. It dawns on the General. Tack bugger! What, General? The fool fell in love with her lover. He's going to try and save her. I can't let that happen. Assemble the security divisions outside the castle's entrance. I'll be there in 15 minutes to brief them. What about that mess in there, sir? What about that mess in there, sir? Don't worry about that, lover. It can rot in there for all I care. Now get moving. The general paces back and forth in front of the human remains that are scattered throughout the small room, contemplating his next move. Seeger still remains in the castle, using the hidden passages and entrance to search for his lover. He enters and exits rooms unseen and unheard from his enemies. Now, he considered Sporenberg and all other Nazis his enemy, and with all enemies, Seeger swore to kill them all. He became filled with the fear that they already captured her. He could not bear this thought. It was bringing out a caged creature that the colonel always fought to keep buried deep inside his psyche. An animalistic rage began to fill him. He could feel it rising up from his feet like a rising river. It began to overtake him. Before the colonel could stop it, battle lust took him. The colonel disappeared, and a killer stood in his place. The small library pulsates with flashes of lightning. The colonel stands in the third story window, gazing at the security teams assembling in the grounds below. He removes his shirt. His muscles bulge and jerk. He is no longer in control of their movement. He knows blood runs off the naked skin better than clothed. He was not going to be an agent of death. He was about to become death. Nothing would keep him from this woman he loved. He would die trying to save her, and so would everybody else. A private from the assembling security masses in the castle's front piers skype. A private from the assembling security masses in the castle's front peers skyward. The castle is illuminated by a lightning flash so intense it almost has an X-ray effect on the castle walls. He is overtaken by a moment of terror. There, in the third-story window, he views a demon, eyes glowing red and wings flared. And then it was gone. Sporenberg walks from the giant front castle doors, his uniform splattered in blood and his eyes black, a sneer baring teeth. Lover, is this all of them? All we could muster and trust, sir. The Nazi general steps onto the edge of the first stone stair. He looks over his minions and begins to dispatch their orders. On behalf of the Führer and the Nazi Party, I declare that Action 66 be implemented. Your orders are as such, screaming at the top of his lungs. Kill them all! Burn, destroy everything, and leave nothing standing. Colonel Seeger to be shot on sight. As for Helga Bellem, capture her and bring her to me. Do you understand? The mass security detail, consisting of 100 highly trained killers, answer their master, back in unison. Yes, sir. The tone rifling through the front doors. The assassination squad begins to move out, spreading out everywhere, some running into the castle, others running through the gardens and grounds. Several military transports quickly loaded up and then driven off to the lower complex and the henge, to where the researchers could be found. The first of three trucks race for the exit of the castle's parking lot. It briefly slows to negotiate the first bend and disappears in a ball of flame produced by hot gas expansion of an incendiary device, a bomb. The truck lifts from the ground, twisting and spinning. The sound of bending metal fills Sporenberg's ears. He turns to view burning bodies running about the paved area and the truck crashing to the ground. Seeger, Sporenberg growls. Private Lubber remains cowered behind a stone statue, peering out at the sight. Lubber, get the hell over here. We need to find Helga before he does. Where are those two big mothers we brought out with us?
I don't know, sir. Looking for Helga, I suppose.
Find them. I need to deal with Seeger, or we will never make it out of here alive. Your search for Miss Waters, Lubber. Well, you search for Miss Waters, Lubber. Lubber, and... You try again. You search for Miss Waters, Lubber, and confine her till I return. Understand?
Yes, sir.
The general leaves Lubber with these orders and then marches to his troops to remain control. Yeah, it's Luber, isn't it? The general leaves Luber with these orders and then marches to his troops to regain control of their panic. He yells orders, pointing and directing them to clear the roadway. How many men were on that transport, Sergeant? The general demands to know.
28, sir.
Sporenberg is surrounded by his subordinates, orchestrating them when 50-caliber machine gun fire explodes from one of the castle's towers. The bullets hit on the castle grounds like rain. Bodies begin to tear apart around Sporenberg, flesh and bone spray across his face. Panic sets in and he freezes. The general stands frozen and in shock until a lonely private tackles him to the ground and pulls him to cover behind the burning wreck.
General, your orders, the young man screams.
It takes Sporenberg several seconds to regain his composure. Return fire! Bullets fly from all directions, from the gardens and front entrances towards the tower. The walls and wooden roof begin to fly apart and descend earthwards. The barrage lasts minutes before silence takes the grounds. Sporenberg stands.
Cease fire! Find him! Find him now!
The general turns to see his two massive bodyguards running down the stone stairs. A sense of relief fills the general.
I'm glad to see you guys. Did you find her?
No, general.
Schultz, go help Luba find our little American spy. Keep her alive till I get back. Understand, lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
He turns to the second man.
We must kill Seeger or he'll mess up all our plans to get rid of the secrets here. We can't let any of them live.
Sporenberg orders a handful of men to follow him and the lieutenant. They gather on the next truck and vanish into the darkness. Luber and Schultz are looking room to room, floor to floor, and after 20 minutes, Luber has a brainstorm.
Lieutenant, we should lay in wait in the second tower. We could see everything, wait to see what comes by.
Good idea, but this would work better. You take a radio up there with you and I will flush her out. When she moves, you radio her position.
Got it.
The private runs upstairs, exhausting himself. He barges through the tower door, gasping for air. He immediately moves towards the window and takes an observer's position. The private pulls out a small set of field binoculars and combs the ground.
Where are you? He keeps saying to himself.
Schultz knows that if he does not find the spy, it will be his ass getting shot and not hers. He runs frantically through rooms, ripping them apart, screaming as he pounds through wood walls. He enters a small library and begins to rip down a bookcase, and the castle gives up one of her many secrets. The fireplace swings away from the wall, revealing a passageway. The lieutenant bends his massive frame at the midsection to view a corridor.
Well, I'll be damned. Maybe our rabbit ran down this hole.
His frame squeezes through the opening, blocking out all the light.
He slowly walks down the sloping path. Schultz moves quietly and listens for any sounds. He stops and focuses his senses to the end of the passageway. The crackle of the radio makes his heart skip a beat. "Lieutenant, I see her."
"Where, Luba?"
"At the edge of a forest, just north of my position, 100 yards or so." Schultz, realizing that the corridor he was standing in pointed north and was not much longer than a few 100 yards.
"Ah, she used this to get here."
His heart begins to race with the anticipation of success. The massive man moves with silence, inching ever closer to Helga's position. Seeger managed to reduce Sporenberg's numbers by 50% with his first commando attack. His next attacks would be directed at Sporenberg. With him dead, the confusion would aid their escapes. Seeger watched from above as Sporenberg screamed his orders. He knew Helga was still free. He had to buy time. How?
Eckert's lab.
He had things going on there that would change the odds. Seeger knew what horrors were caged up in the depths of his cabin. The colonel's figure slipped silently through the woods to Eckert's lab, the rain pounding, pouring off his body as he pushes ever closer to the depth of man's technological darkness. Sporenberg made his way down the mountain slope, killing indiscriminately. First to Henge. Dozens of technicians were called to the transports and asked to fall in line to await orders. They did as they were asked. The payment for their obedience was a mass machine gun fire. The gown became soaked with their blood as it mixed with the heavy rains. The whites of their lab coats stained with blood. The bell stood in the background, waiting for its destiny to be fulfilled.
"General, what about the bell?"
"We'll come back for that when everybody's dead and the records are destroyed. We're going to require shitloads of explosives to make that disappear."
"Yes, sir."
The assassins file back on the truck and continue to their next mass killing. They don't wait long. Pulling into the tunnel entrance out of Complex A, they come across 20 or so workers. These ones run. The SS open fire, shooting every last person in the back. The tunnel way is littered with bodies. The soldiers continue walking down the tunnel's entrance looking for more victims. If they find wounded, they kill. Vicious are their actions. Some save bullets and use the gun butts to cave in skulls. The screams and machine gun fire alert the other facilities. Death is coming. Everyone panics. A stampede of workers fills the tunnel ways and lab areas. Sporenberg shouts at his team.
"Quick, get in there and start killing them. We don't have a night."
Sporenberg is knocked off his feet. The entire complex shakes and roars. Another explosion. This time Seeger got to the fuel tanks deep in Complex D. A fireball blasts high into the stormy night sky. It can be seen from miles around. A beacon for Allied bombers. The general is aided to his feet once again by a private.
"Sir, are you okay?"
"Yes, yes, I think so."
The general responds in a confused state.
"The colonel's at it again, General," his giant lieutenant says.
"Seeger."
The general checks his weapon and runs into the chaos. The lieutenant follows close on his heels. Seeger's half-naked body slithers through the complexes, setting booby traps and snares along his way. He has one more stop, Eckert's lab. He knew in a locked vault the worst of Eckert's experiments remained confined. He never laid eyes on them, but he saw the top-secret reports about Eckert's reanimation procedures. The horrors he was about to unleash would even the odds. They would tie up Sporenberg's assassination team, cause so much confusion he might be able to get Helga to safety. The thought of her betrayal did not even enter his mind. Deep down, somewhere inside him, he knew what she was doing all along. It didn't matter. She consumed him. He owed her sanctuary for letting him love again. That it was okay to do so. She opened his black heart to the possibilities of love. He died after his family's death, and it was Helga who breathed life back into a worn-out soul.
"Hang on, baby, I'm coming."
he whispers to her.
By this time, the electrical grids through the various facilities were badly damaged. Some areas were in complete darkness and others flashing violently between light and dark. Seeger used this to his advantage, ducking and weaving among the shadows. Unseen and unheard, he enters the service corridor to Section Z. He can hear a massive gun battle occurring in the main entrance corridor. The colonel peers around the corner.
It's Eckert. That crazy bastard is fighting back. He had about 12 security personnel loyal to him and Kamla well-armed and fighting for their lives.
How does he get around them unnoticed and into Eckert's lab? The colonel begins to frantically look for an answer. It's not long before he sees an air shaft grate illuminated by a flash of light among the darkness.
That'll do, he says to himself.
The colonel stands, and with all his force, he rips the grate off the wall. In a flash, he disappears into the air shaft, dragging him ever so slowly as not to make any sound. He knew Eckert, and who knows who else would be locked in that cavern. He must enter unseen. In minutes, the terror in the corridors would turn nightmarish. Seeger comes to the end of the shaft. He can see his object in the far distance, the vault door. He exits silently onto a fourth-level platform. The bowels of the cavern are filled with the muffled sounds of gunfire and screaming, the occasional crash of thunder rumbling low in the background. He creeps along the decking, watching for movement. Soon the shadow of two figures can be made out. Seeger crouches to observe.
Ah, Kamla, that's where you are.
The colonel is overcome with curiosity.
What the hell are they up to?
He can see them working frantically on a large device.
Is that the Wunderwaffe?
No time to care. He had to get back to find Helga and get the hell out of there. His attention returns to the matters at hand. The colonel manages to maneuver around Eckert and Kamla with ease, their attention too focused on what they were doing. He comes to the vault and sneaks to the control panel. He has a choice, door one or door two. One, access the lab, and two, access the corridor where the battle raged. He would have liked to see Karma pay back Eckert and Kamla, but he figured he'd leave it to Sporenberg to kill them. Door number two it is. The colonel presses the button and disappears the same way he came to get back to Helga. In the darkness, Helga remains kneeling near the edge of the forest. She is unaware of the eyes that watch her every move. She knew that Sporenberg has ordered her and Rudolf Steff. While Seeger was listening to these commands, so was she. She has not moved, frozen and confused, nowhere to go. Where was Seeger? She needed to find him, and fast. Time was running out. She could not remain hidden forever. Helga, realizing that Seeger could never find her where she was, presently located, decided to sneak back into the castle's interior. Wait, she says to herself. The passageway, screams out in her mind. Of course, that's where Rudolf told everyone to head for if this day occurred. She slowly rises from her kneeling position to a standing posture, She slowly rises from her kneeling position to a standing posture, turning to run for new cover. Her journey stopped by the massive body of a Nazi giant. Her heart drops to her feet when her eyes look up to meet with Lieutenant Schultz's eyes. Helga was no match for the speed or strength of this man.
Gotcha! You're coming with me, Miss Walters.
With these words, she knew the jig was up, that her lover knew who and what she really was. It broke her heart, thinking Rudolf would be crushed, devastated, and that he would hate her. The fear of what awaited her not even entering her mind. From the tower's window, Luba could see the massive figure dragging Helga across the castle's lawn. She was kicking and fighting, screaming, but there was no stopping the force that was pulling her to her destiny. Sporenberg came upon his troops in the main corridor to Section Z. His soldiers dug in and fighting an intense gun battle with those loyal to Kamla.
What the hell is this, Lieutenant?
We encountered resistance, sir.
No shit, but who are they?
Those are Kamla's security forces.
So that's where he is. Kill them all and hurry up with it.
Yes, sir. The lieutenant screams,
Forward!
Several follow his command. They explode like water balloons, hitting a wall when the machine gun bullets tear through their bodies. Suddenly, the opposing forces stop.
Retreat, retreat, the commander yells.
See, we got them on the run, Sporenberg screams. The terror of gunfire is replaced with an eerie silence, and then a sound, far more frightening than any gun battle, fills the air. A low-tone growl rumbles through Sporenberg's heart. He turns to view Eckert's creations. Dozens of human figures can be seen entering the corridor. The 20 assassins stand silent, watching the shadows stagger, bumping into each other and off the corridor walls. Sporenberg calls out,
Who goes there?
The figures stop in the darkness of the corridor and turn to gaze at their next meal. One more growl fills the air, and the mass of horror charges at Sporenberg's forces.
Fire! Fire!
Sporenberg calls out. The corridor ignites with screams and gunfire. The general and his lieutenant fight for their lives, stabbing, slashing, and punching their way to safety. Sir, this way, the lieutenant shouts to his master. Sporenberg sees the escape route.
Let's get the hell out of here.
Before leaving, he shouts his final orders to these men.
Hold them here, Private. Do not let these things get out into the facilities.
Yes, sir, the private responds between trigger pulls on his automatic weapon. Sporenberg hears the radio on the lieutenant's chest crackle for life.
We have her, General.
Good, Luba. Confine her to her room. I'm on my way. Sporenberg excitedly responds. Another blast rocks through the corridors and complexes.
Sir, at this rate, Zika's going to destroy this facility himself.
It's not the facility I care about, Lieutenant. He and his giant companions struggle to find their way out through the maze of corridors, but at every turn they encounter Seeger's traps and follies. Their journey back to the castle was no picnic. Seeger can hear the screams echo through the corridors. It worked. Sporenberg ran head-on into Eckert's creations. Little did Sporenberg know that Zegers was listening to his every command. This was not the colonel's first kick at the cat, and he made sure that before he left the castle, a radio was in his pack. By now, Seeger knew where his love was being held and that she was still unharmed. That would not remain this way for long. Sporenberg and his killers were racing to her as well. No time to waste, he ran with an untamed rage as fast as he could for her. He needed the element of surprise to guarantee her safety. He came across the forest entrance to a secret corridor that would lead him to a small library deep in the castle's interior. With the stealth of a shadow warrior, the colonel creeps into the underground corridor. Step by step, he makes his way down the dimly lit passageway. He can see the secret fireplace entrance is wide open. He stops and realizes that the secrecy of the castle was compromised. He didn't care. He was too close to stop. He continues walking towards the opening until he was stopped by the light at the end of the tunnel being blocked out by a massive shadow. The shadow calls out,
Seeger!
The colonel stands like a beast, nostril flared, teeth grinding, muscles flexing, only growls exhaling from his heaving chest. It's then the glimmering blades of two Nazi daggers show his intent. Lieutenant Schultz looks down the dark path at the demon's eyes that stared back, terrify him. Panic sets in, and the only reaction he can display is to mimic the low-toned growls. This only strengthens the resolve of the force of nature that is about to descend on him.
The men explode into an animalistic scream, running at one another with the strength and speed of wild beasts. Inch by inch, gut-wrenching moment by moment, they grow even closer. For both men, time slows down, their senses heightened. They can hear one another's breath as they prepare to collide. The giant lieutenant swings his knife with all his might at Seeger's throat. The colonel is too fast for the giant. He ducks under his swing and surfaces just behind and to the right of him. Instinctively, Seeker knows he's in the kill zone. The 12-inch blade of his dagger is brought close to his opposite shoulder, and with the force of a hammer plunges it through the lieutenant's ribcage. Pulling it from the wound and swinging under the lieutenant's still extended arm, the colonel takes a position directly in front of his victim. The large man stumbles to the left. Shock set in when he felt and heard the gasp of blood and air from the unseen wound. Seeger compensates for the man's movement, holding him steady by his extended arm. The lieutenant's blank look stares into Seeger's eyes. The same dagger that delivered the first blow twirls in the colonel's hand and is brought skyward, sinking through the neck, then tongue, and finally piercing the skull. The colonel does not remove his weapon. The sickness takes over. He supports the dead man's weight by the handle of the blade, impaling his skull. Seeger nestles his brow to his victim's. He stares deep into the light fading quickly from the lieutenant's eyes and breathes in Schultz's soul. He exhales with a scream that roars through the castle and sends the lieutenant's soul to hell. Seeger's battle cry reaches the far side of the castle and trembles through Luba's heart. His eyes show his true fear. "He's coming," Helga whispers. Luba opens the bedroom door and orders the six guards to take position in the hallway. "Don't let anyone through except General Sporenberg." "Yes, sir," they respond. Luba reaches to his side and draws his SS-issued Luger and backs through the doorway, closing it behind him. The young man shields himself behind Helga, who is now tied to a wooden chair in the center of the room. "Well, Miss Waters, looks like your boyfriend is going to try to save you." No sooner than these words left Luba's lips, the lights through the castle blank and then finally go out. The interior of the great domicile left in complete darkness, occasionally glowing blue with flashes of lightning. Terror fills Luba. He stays frozen, listening. The silence causing his heart to race with the anticipation of unknown consequences. He doesn't wait long. Heavy footsteps can be heard climbing the stairway, then they stop. Behind the door confining Luba, screams and gunfire erupt. Luba watches the flashes under the doorway. With each passing second, less gunfire and fewer screams until there is nothing. Only the sound of a gasping animal. Footsteps follow, moving ever closer to the bedroom door. Heavy and filled with purpose, the steps fall on the old wooden floor. Luba stands in the darkness and points his weapon at the door, waiting to fire. The room is silent. Helga is shaking and terrified. Luba barks out, "I know you're there, Seeger!" In the darkness of the room, a gunshot rings out. The bedroom wall shatters, revealing a small caliber hole. The event followed by a thud. Luba's body falls like a tree to the wood floor. Helga peers at the body lying beside her, and then the door comes crashing in. There stands her lover, covered in blood and flesh, eyes wide open, blaring the madness of battle back at her. "Rudolf!" she cries out. The sound of her voice pulls him back to reality, calming the demon that stands in front of her. He drops the weapon and steps forward to her, falling to his knees. Seeger unties her slender frame. She immediately clings to him. Whimpering, she explains herself. "I'm sorry. I wanted to tell you, but I couldn't, Rudolf." He lifts her head gently in his hands, stares deeply into her big blue eyes. "I don't care, Helga.
It's over now, and all that matters is you're safe. But tell me one thing. Was our love real? Tears roll from her eyes, streaming down her cheeks and neck. She gazes into Seeker's pupils and says, I will never stop loving you, Rudolph. You're the only thing in my life that is true. He embraces her. Come on, baby, we've got to get out of here.
Where to, Rudolph?
We've got to get to the Bell. It's our only hope of getting out of here alive. The two lovers aid each other outside and disappear into the forest. The journey to the Henge will be difficult, as Sporenberg is hot on their trail. Chapter 21. Alternative Methods. At the end of World War II, as the Allies entered Germany and Berlin fell, the Nazi secrets came to light. A group of six Canadian soldiers creeped through the Argonne Forest. Their orders are to recon the area, specifically to search for Nazi scientists that are hiding out all over Germany.
Hey, Landl, get your ass over that hill and tell me what you see, eh?
Yes, sir.
The kid, no more than 18, bolts off running in and out of trees towards the hilltop. When he gets to the top, he dives into the ground, remaining flat and unseen. The young private reaches in his jacket and pulls out a small set of field binoculars. He peers downward to a large wooden building sheltered by the edge of the forest. He watches for a long time, looking for enemy movement. For that matter, any movement. He sees none. Making his way back to his companions, the private hopes they have found a place to sleep for the night. The last few were spent in the woods.
Well, London, what do you see? Major seems to be an abandoned shelter of some sort over that hill. Any sign of Nazis?
No, sir, nothing.
They're not very Canadian, sorry.
Okay, then, maybe the French-Canadian.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, then, move slowly into position under surrounding the building. Usual signals and radio when you're in position. Understand?
Yes, sir.
They scatter in all directions, disappearing from sight. About 15 minutes later, Major Allen's radio crackles.
In position, sir.
The Major orders two soldiers to approach the building from the rear.
Take your time and don't get shot.
Got it, sir.
The Major observes from the hilltop, his men like phantoms appearing from the forest's edge. They slide alongside the shelter, their backs pressed firmly against the walls.
Major. Major, there is no windows. I can't see in, the raider whispers into his radio set.
No windows?
Yeah, that's right, sir. No windows. Proceed to the front doors. All of you get there and now storm the place.
The five stormtroopers charge into action. Guns raised, war faces shown. They breach the front corners of the building, and two men rush in to deal with the latching mechanism. The other three stand in front with weapons raised and ready to fire. The Major sees his team enter the building and anxiously waits a response. Silence fills the atmosphere. The radio crackles to life once again.
Major, you better get down here and have a look at this.
What is it, Hank?
I don't know, sir. Some sort of plane or something. I never saw anything quite like it.
The Major makes a running dash down the hill to the barn-type structure. He arrives, exhausted and excited.
Let me see this thing.
He gazes on an object straight out of a science fiction comic book.
Well, I'll be damned.
What is it, Major?
I don't know, but start looking around for any documents.
They tear the place, looking for answers. They tear the place apart, looking for answers.
Major, I found something, Hank calls out.
What is it?
Look, they call it the Horton B-229.
The sergeant holds a folder containing dimensional drawings and specifications of the craft. The Major grabs it from his hands.
Here, I'll take that. This could be top secret. We have to radio this into headquarters ASAP. Hey, look what I found, Major.
Lundell has stumbled across a case of brandy and cigars.
The Major responds, okay, maybe we'll call him in the morning.
The five roar in laughter. They barricade the door and start a fire for warmth in the corner stove. The five brothers in arms sit around the warm stove drinking and smoking. It's like an island vacation for these men. Death has been all they lived since they dropped into Normandy. Hey guys, listen to this. Radar tests on the BHO-229 show that the plane's radical smooth design would indeed give a significant advantage against radar or low observable technology. What does that mean, sir?
Radar invisibility, Jake.
So, the Major replies.
So, the sergeant says, the Major replies. So they could fly these right up our asses and we'd never see them coming.
Hey, Major, it says in this paper some shit about time travel and dimensional travel.
You're right, Lundell.
I'm not kidding, sir.
Yeah, right, Lundell. I'm not kidding, sir. Here, let me see that.
The young private hands over the paper.
What, you two read German?
Both the Major and I do, Hank. How do you think we got around Europe so easily, you dumb bastard?
Oh, you shut up while I translate this.
The Major takes his time. He doesn't want to get this wrong. The bell. They call it Die Glocke. That's German for the bell.
Chapter 22. Sporenborg's story. In a dank, dark room sits a figure. Head slouched, body shaking. A single light directly above his head swings slightly. A door opens abruptly. His head pops up, face cut in batters, one eye swollen, almost shut, and four men file into the room. Two stand in the corner adjacent to him, and the other two sit directly in front. In a thick Russian accent.
Okay, Sporenborg, you want to save your life, or just prolong it? Tell me what you got.
In a stutter and weak voice.
Die Glocke.
The bell.
Louder, General.
The bell. It's all real. It's real.
Slow down, General. Start somewhere we can understand.
Special Weapons Project Rees.
Risa.
We were trying to build a super weapon, the Wunderwaffe. A weapon that would win the war. The bell was part of it. It gave us insights to energies and phenomena that could change the world.
That's fine, Sporenborg, but where's the proof? The scientists, the test equipment, for that matter, the bell, where are they?
Destroyed. Everything. The Führer ordered everything destroyed. The order was called Action 66.
The second guard sitting in front of the general stands from his sitting position. A massive figure, he steps towards the quivering man who without warning raises his hand high into the air. With lightning speed, all the man's weight comes crashing down. A grotesque thud fills the small cement room, followed by a gut-wrenching moan of pain and despair from the fallen Nazi general.
The truth!
Followed by another vicious blow.
The truth, General! Where are the scientists?
Dead? All dead.
What do you mean, dead? Killed in the bomb raids?
No.
Killed by us. All 60 except four.
Which four?
Colonel Seeger? Otto Serny,
Kurt Davis, and Helga Wellem.
Where are these people?
I don't know.
Smack!
Sporenborg is awakened from near unconsciousness by an open hand slap from the Russian lieutenant.
What do you mean you don't know?
What about the research documents? Asked the Russian general.
Burned just prior to the mass Allied raids of late April.
Everything destroyed. Everything gone. The Russian lieutenant prepares for another strike. The door slams open again.
Stop, gentlemen! Don't lay another hand on that man!
The Russian general rises and turns on to this command with anger and aggression.
Who the hell? As the Russian general sees the stars of the admiral glare in the oscillations between light and dark of the swinging light.
He stops.
He instantly stands straight.
Sorry, sir!
It's okay, General Kirchhoff. The admiral steps into the center of the room.
General Spurenberg, I'm Admiral Gorchev. The Admiral turns to the guards in the adjacent quarters. Take this man to my command quarters. Get him cleaned up and fed. Have my physician look at him as well. And soldiers, anything happens to him, it'll be your asses in that chair. Do you understand? Yes, sir. The two nervously fumble, releasing the Nazi general. Okay, you two. The German turns to the two torturistic warmongers to his left. I say this once and once only. I was never here, and neither was Spurenberg. Understand? Yes, Admiral. The ranking member of the KGB turns and disappears to the nearby corridor. He is chased down by a small, nervous figure. The fellow reminds the Admiral of a scared little mouse.
Christ, Lemon, I'm not going to kill you. What is it?
Admiral, sir, Spurenberg is on his way to the command center.
Good. Did you get the information from General Kirchhoff and his lieutenant?
Yes, sir. The Admiral grabs the report from the private, shaking hands.
We need to find out from Spurenberg where these four missing members of the Bell Science team are. I know the rest are definitely dead. We found the mass grave in the Owl Mountains this morning. Those crazy Nazis had some weird ex-science crap happening in the castle class. Stalin wants every German scientist he can get his hands on. We need to do this before the Allies get here and do the same thing.
Yes, sir.
We have maybe 24 to 48 hours, Lemon, so we need to act fast. I want Spurenberg ready for me in an hour's time. Prepare a history file. I want to know everything about our Nazi general.
Yes, sir.
Okay, get going, Lemon.
The private scurries off into action. The Admiral's bulky shadow continues down the corridor. He stands in the late spring air, and even though it might be a burned-out scene that spreads out as far as the eyes can see, he is filled with a freshness. Berlin has fallen, a new era about to begin with the war over. The Admiral's interests are piqued at the recent development in regards to the Nazi secret weapons program. The sun sets on the smouldering city as Gorchev makes his way to the military limousine waiting for him. He thinks while driving to the command center. What were they up to? Spurenberg could have all the answers. If so, perhaps this technology could give the Soviet Union an advantage in the Cold War to come. This could get the Admiral a long way with Stalin. The Admiral mauled over how to get the truth. Torture? People say anything under pain. Trust. That was it. He must get Spurenberg to trust him, and fast. The Admiral's car arrives at headquarters. The car door opened for the Admiral. His bulky frame fights to get out of the limo door. He's greeted by Lemon. Here, sir, the General's file.
Good, Lemon. Get my dinner and bath ready. I want to be fresh for the general.
Yes, sir.
The two walk up to a gorgeous villa. The Admiral says,
This is a magnificent house, Lemon. What Nazi did this belong to?
Not a Nazi, sir. A major Nazi supporter. The Wilhelms.
Wait, I know that name.
From the report, sir.
Helga Wilhelm.
That's it.
So, what happened? Where is this family?
Dead as far as we know, sir. So far, everything attached to these secret projects has been killed, burned, or both.
They must have been onto something big, Lemon. So why were these Wilhelms melded?
Perhaps Spurenberg could shed some light on this matter. But as far as we can find out, they were supplying the SS with information.
I guess we'll find out soon enough, Lemon.
The two enter two large white wooden doors to a scene of hustle and bustle. Military personnel running about, saluting the Admiral as he pushes past.
Upstairs, Admiral.
The Admiral follows Lemon up the stairs to a hot meal and bath. As the Admiral lies naked in his steaming hand poured... As the Admiral lies naked in his steaming hand-poured bath, he speaks.
Okay, Lemon, read me that file on Sporenberg. The skinny, boy-like man put his glasses on, sets the folder upon his lap, gently opens it, and begins to read. Jacob Sporenberg, born September 16, 1902, in Dusseldorf, Germany. He joined the SS in 1926 and by 1933 was promoted to the rank of Brigade Führer. In 1941 he was again promoted to SS General and placed in charge of the secret weapons development. The young private reads on of Sporenberg's war atrocities. Well, Lemon, we knew we were dealing with the right type of character to hold such secrets. The Admiral lifts his body from the tub and gives the private the full frontal. Get me a towel. Don't just stand there. I'm getting cold. The private hurries to solve both their dilemmas. Okay, get me my best uniform while I get ready. The time passes, but passes all the same. Lemon and the Admiral enter a small, comfortable study, a fire burning in the nearby fireplace. Bring me Sporenberg and a bottle of brandy. Yes, sir. He runs off, and several minutes later returns to the dimly lit room. Please, General, have a seat. Gorchev extends his arm towards the sofa. Sporenberg clicks his heels and slightly bows. Thank you, Admiral. The Nazi General had regained his composure. He is no longer the quivering slump of a man he was just hours before. Are you feeling better, General? Yes, Admiral. Thank you once again for your professional courtesy. A drink, General.
Thank you.
Lemon, get me a refill and the General a fresh glass. Have you been fed, General?
Yes, sir.
The Admiral keeps the conversation light and the brandy flowing. He waits for the right moment. General, I need to know about the Nazi special weapons projects. What was going on at Kazars Castle? Admiral, I must ask you if what I'm about to tell you will get me any leniency with the courts at my war trial. I'm sure the death of 6 million Jews and countless others will guarantee that won't happen. I will say this, it will make the road to your inevitable execution more comfortable. Your choice, Sporenberg, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. So, what's it going to be, General? The fall of 1943 is when it first started, Admiral. For the next several hours, the Admiral listened in astonishment to the tales of the secret projects. At points, During the General's confession, the Admiral was filled with fear and anxiety. Details of the grotesque human experiments and the assassination of the near 60 researchers brought a sick gleam to Sporenberg's eye. It was the next words from Sporenberg's mouth that would stay with Gorchev the rest of his days. We stumbled across time tunneling, Admiral. De Bell created gravitational distortions for means of propulsion. But if you created too strong of a field, we found you just don't travel through space, you jump through time.
And you saw this, General?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, 3 weeks prior to the surrender of Germany, in late April, I saw it disappear.
What do you mean, you saw it disappear?
I know, Admiral, you want the remaining scientists, but I tell you, this Colonel Seeker and Helga Vellum will never be seen again.
Why, General?
That night in April, when I killed the researchers and destroyed all the evidence, I saw them disappear with the bell. Immediately after the killing, I went to find Seeger and kill him. But he's one well-trained warrior. His knowledge of the grounds and complexes exceeded mine and my men. He led us on a wild goose chase, taking us through the underground corridors of Risa, separated me from my men, took our attention away from interrogating Helga Vellum.
Interrogate her for what?
She was not who she appeared to be. We knew we had a spy in our midst shortly after the bombing of the first Bell tests. The question to be answered was who? Good fortune came in the form of a captured American lieutenant.
torture brought forth the information we required, and the Yankee told us who she really was.
Who was that, General?
Miss Kitty Waters, an American spy. She was not a Wilhelm at all, but a plant. The real Helga Wilhelm died a year previous in Canada of influenza. The Americans are quite innovative, Admiral. They managed to fool the real Wilhelms. Plastic surgery, the whole bit. Years of absence from family and boarding school made their task much easier.
Whose task?
The CIA, Admiral. We had our spies, too. The Nazi Party was well aware of the world domination plans of democracy. Anyways, I had her locked away in the room at Castle Kazess, and at some point while chasing Seeger, he aided her escape. I caught up with them a short time later at the Hens, but I was too late to stop them.
Too late to stop them from what?
Disappearing into time, sir. Myself and four of my finest saw them entering the Bell. We began firing, but the holding bay doors closed and the rain of bullets just ricocheted off. As we came up to the Henge, I ordered my men to throw grenades. By this time, the Bell's gravitational fields made this impossible. It rose to an altitude of 800 feet or so, then exploded into an array of brilliant blue light and was gone.
Gone where?
We don't know, Admiral. Even the early test model disappeared to unknown locations. We don't know where they ended up. It wasn't until just before the Allied bombing in April that Seeger and Eckert figured this out.
So you're telling me, General Sporenberg, that they just vanished into time?
Where into time?
Like I said, Admiral, I don't really know.
Seeger theorized sometime in the future. For some reason beyond my comprehension, one cannot travel backwards in time, only forward. The intense conversation is interrupted by a shallow knock at the study door.
What, Lemon?
Admiral, I have some news.
Well, out with it.
Private news, sir. The small private, like a scared beat dog, cautiously approaches the Admiral. He bends towards the Admiral's ear and whispers. The Admiral chuckers.
Ain't that a kicker? Well, General, we just found out what happened to the other two missing researchers. Otte Cerny and Kurt Davis were captured by the Allies about an hour ago. No doubt they'll be telling the Americans what they know as well.
No doubt, Admiral, but they were only researchers, their knowledge of the entire scope limited. Only I know the true events from that fateful night in April.
Go on, General.
I know you're interested in General Kamla and Dr. Warner Eckert.
Absolutely.
Where are they?
Dead.
Where are the bodies, Sporenberg?
Under 100 tons of rubble.
That night after I witnessed the Bell disappear, I returned to the underground passageway leading to Section Z to kill the good doctor and general. Seeger managed to let some of those creatures of Eckert's out, and the complex and castle grounds were in chaos. The lights flashing on and off, sparks, fire, screams. It was nightmarish, Admiral. My men and I managed to fight our way to Section Z. That's where I witnessed it.
Witnessed what, General?
Dr. Eckert and General Kamla die.
Go on.
Seeger killed him.
Well, that is, killed Eckert.
What?
General, this nonsense you just told me. Seeger and Helga Kel Wilhelm, or Kitty Waters, whatever name, were disappeared in the Bell.
I was as dismayed as you, sir. I still can't figure it out, but I know what my own two eyes saw. I stood at the entrance to Eckert's massive cave dwelling and peered into the darkness. The far corner was glowing an eerie green. My officers and I crept in to get a better view. I saw Kamla and the doctor standing on a platform some 15 feet in the air. Eckert managed to hijack a large quantity of red mercury over the last 12 months. I guess him and Kamla had their own plans of escape, just not what I expected. Eckert had a field generator constructed on this platform. The two cylinders were rotating at an incredible velocity. The cabin became filled with a deafening hum. I screamed at the doctor and general at the top of my lungs. They could not hear me, but Eckert saw me.
What did he do then, General?
The crazy bastard smiled at me
and then casually pushed Kamla into the spinning cylinders. He was ripped into shreds and scattered everywhere. Eckert turned to face the diamond-blue spatial distortion that was forming from the surface of the field generator. He took a step towards the expanding phenomena, and suddenly, from the depths of the green-blue mist, Seeger came flying out, tackling Eckert to the platform. I couldn't believe my eyes. I was frozen in amazement, stunned, Admiral. I could not comprehend my surroundings. I quickly recognized this also as an effect of the radiation generated by these gravitational fields. I told my men to begin to evacuate the chamber. I turned to see Seeger pinning the doctor to the platform. The able Eckert fought with all his might, but was no match for our colonel. I watched Seeger grab a knife from Eckert's waist and sink it deep into his forehead. Seeger raised and stood over the doctor's corpse. The doctor turned, dropping a grenade on the platform. He then disappeared into the mist. I ran as quickly as I could to the exit, and then the bombs found us. Only I and two of my officers made it out. So that was the last you saw of Seeger, then? Yes, sir. The last time. General Sporenberg would go on to help the Admiral recover bits and pieces of those secret projects, but to no avail. Several years later, the hangman's noose took him just the same. Chapter 23. A Fantastic Tale. In the midst of a hot summer evening, the moon high in the night sky, Ed Walters stands on the hillside, breathing in the fresh air and appreciating the silence Pennsylvania has to offer. He lived on this Kecksburg farm since he was a boy. Ed knew every nook and cranny of this land. He gazed into the vast array of endless stars thousands of times, wondering what was out there, if anything. On this particular evening, at the age of 62, he lies down on the soft green meadow grass and relaxes his body. He stares in amazement at the stars. "Wow, they never stop to amaze me," he whispers into the night. Several minutes pass by. He listens to the crickets and tree frogs sing to each other, watches the fireflies dance around him. Ed stares at the moon. He finds the pet dog licking his face. "Hey boy, what's up?" Rising to a sitting position with one arm embracing man's best friend. "It's hard to believe, but it's 1965, hey boy?" The dog barks and licks his master's face. They roll and play like children. Suddenly, the sky explodes in light. A thunderous low boom emanates throughout the nearby valley. Ed is pushed to the ground, and so is his dog. The dog regains an upward-moving position faster than Ed. As a matter of fact, the dog is instantly gone. "What the hell?" Ed quickly gets to his feet and stares skyward. A glowing ball of light is slowly zigzagging in the sky, directly in front of him. It's about 800 or 900 feet in altitude, and slowly descending towards the base of the valley. He stands in shock, frozen, unable to move or scream. Just frozen. Ed witnesses one of the greatest UFO sightings in history, but at that time was unaware of its significance. He later told reporters that he had built up enough courage to walk down the hillside the quarter mile or so to where the object descended to. Just minutes before the US military arrived on site and evicted Ed Walters, he told of what he saw. Which is what brings me to the bedside of a dying man I have never met before in my life. Several years ago, my career, for better or worse, I haven't decided yet, took a turn to the sci-fi. The magazine Nowhere hired me, and I've been chasing aliens ever since. Here, at Chicago St. Anne's Hospital, I doubt I'll find any, but my editor-in-chief wants me to interview a former NASA employee named Otto Czerny. He's some ex-Nazi, says he knows about Kecksburg and the whole Nazi UFO thing. I've been down this road again and again, chasing the proverbial enigma.
never really getting any solid proof or evidence that aliens exist or UFOs are real.
Yeah, Charles Grant. Yeah, Charles Grant, the great alien reporter. At least that's what my grandkids will joke about my funeral, the man says to himself. Yeah, Charles Grant, the great alien reporter. Or at least that's what my grandkids will joke about at my funeral, the man says to himself as he gazes on the fluorescent cross that hangs above the hospital's entrance. Anyways, just here doing my job, getting that paycheck. Several minutes later, I'm at the floor's information desk, waiting for some service.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes? I turn to view a young, beautiful nurse. Her large brown eyes steal my soul and captivate my attention. Oh. Sorry.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes? I turn to view a young, beautiful nurse. Her large brown eyes steal my soul and captivate my attention. I'm here to see Otto Czerny. Could you help me?
Yes. Follow me.
I follow her down a hallway several rooms away from the nurse's station. The smell of antiseptic and sickness fills my senses. I look up. Room 525 in big black letters stare back at me. There in the far bed.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I slowly walk towards the frail old man lying feet away. I don't really feel comfortable around the sick. I guess it's because of my own fears of dying. I fight through the anxiety of this thought.
It's just a job. Get it done, is what I keep telling myself.
The man positioned in a semi-sitting position turns.
Hey, young lad, how are you?
Fine, sir, and yourself?
The old man struggles to bring his weak and frail hand up to greet me. IV tube still hanging from his wrists.
Otto Czerny, son. Pleased to meet you.
I'm Charles Grant, sir, with the magazine Nowhere.
Yes, I've been waiting for you.
I move between his bed and the large room window. I pull up a nearby chair and sit by the old man's side.
My editor-in-chief told me that you wanted to give a statement regarding UFOs and aliens.
I have a story to tell, not a statement to give, son.
About UFOs and aliens, sir?
Yes, yes, yes.
He gasps for air.
I could tell this man was hours from the grave and felt he needed to unburden himself of past sins. Perhaps what he was about to tell me was worth listening to. I comfort him and let him know it's all okay and to take his time. I had no place to be. I can tell by his breathing this comforted the dying man.
So many things change throughout life, Charles. What was will not be, what wasn't will be.
These were statements as a young man I did not understand, but now on my deathbed I've come to realize that they mean nothing lasts forever. Friendships, loves, family, all leave this place sooner or later, Charles. Embrace your youth. Don't waste the precious time given to you here.
I agree with the old man.
Tell him, I know. He takes another deep breath. Okay, son, I'm ready. He began to speak of a time and place that has always intrigued me. He talked like he was there. The smell and sights of 1943 Berlin came alive, and I was transported to a place in Otto Czerny's mind through words. For the next several hours, I listened, unable to speak or ask a question. The old man told the tale with such conviction I became to believe him. We came to a spot outside the castle grounds.
Who, Otto?
Me and Kurt Davis.
Oh, the electrical engineer.
That's right. He and I used the secret tunnel that Seeger showed us weeks before the Allied air raids and the surrender of Germany. The colonel had a good idea that Germany was going to lose the war and the SS would have us all killed to protect their secrets.
He told us so. Said Sporenberg would be the guy to do it, and he was right. It was only by an act of God that Davis and I escaped.
The old man had to rest and take several more deep breaths before continuing.
Charles, that night Davis and I were returning from preparing the bell for delivery of the Wunderwaffe.
An atomic weapon, Otto?
No, something else. No one knew. Dr. Eckert was doing some sort of experiments. I don't know what exactly. But it had to do with the radiation effects of red mercury. I found Surik just minutes before running into Davis.
Wait, I thought Surik went missing weeks earlier.
Yes, he did. But what I saw was Surik's body, not the Surik I knew.
What, was he dead?
Not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly, Otto?
Dr. Eckert must have faked his disappearance to do experiments on him, or perhaps Surik got affected during one of the doctor's experiments. I don't know. The only way I can describe what I say is Surik was a zombie. His eyes were whited over, his skin grey, his face covered in blood and bits of meat, like he was feeding on raw flesh. I was in the underground corridor just down for Eckert's research lab. The lights were flashing. The corridor was changing states between complete darkness and eerie blue flashes. Surik was just standing there, stumbling around with several others that had met the same fate. I was so frightened I just turned and ran. I could hear machine gun fire in the far tunnels. It was Sporenberg's assassination squads come to destroy the complexes and their horrible secrets. I couldn't believe it. Seeker was right. Just then, Kurt Davis comes barreling down Corridor E.
Otto, Otto, he was screaming.
I was glad to see him. He collapsed into my arms.
They're killing everybody, Otto. We got to get out of here.
The tunnel, I responded. We ran with all our might. I remember that I was so exhausted. By the time we entered the secret passage, I almost vomited. I felt relief and comfort, even though the passageway was dark and cramped. We knew only Seeger and us knew of it. We slowly made our way using fingers, lighters, and touch. The exit was deep outside the castle grounds in the forested landscape of the harsh Owl Mountains. Davis and I exited into the crisp spring air. We could hear explosions and gunfire. It was complete chaos. We stayed low and crept through the forest to a ledge that overlooked the henge and down the mountainside towards Castle Kazus. We could see everything. Like flies on the wall, we watched in shock and awe. Shortly after calming down, Davis patted me on the shoulder and said, "Otto, look, look." He was pointing at the henge. I could see the small Kronos model of the bell sitting in the center of the henge. Suddenly, Helga and Seeger came frantically running out of the forest towards the bell. Sif Sporenberg and several of his team members were just behind them, firing. Did them no good, though. Their bullets just ricocheted off its steel construction. The bell slowly started spinning. Seeger had activated the drive system. Within seconds, the bell was revolving at full speed, filling the mountainside with a screaming hum. Davis and I watched it rise to about 800 feet in altitude, and then the sky exploded with a brilliant light. When I looked up and brought my hand from my face, they were gone. Everything, completely silent and calm. I could hear Sporenberg yelling at his men to follow him back to Eckert's lab. The old man struggles to point at the dresser next to the bed. In there, Charles.
What, Otto?
Pictures. You can see them for yourself. I opened the top drawer, and placed in an old leather diary was a picture. Black and white, warm, and slightly faded. Five people stood in the photo. Hand it to the old man. See, Charles, there's me, he points.
Heh, you're a good-looking fellow, Otto.
We all were.
He was right.
All five looked distinguished and youthful in appearance. Otto began to point and tell whose was who. The photograph upset Otto. Tears began to roll from his eyes. I could tell that the people in the photo were important to Otto Cerny. I represented tremendous loss with the dying man. Colonel Seeger and Helga were in the middle. Both had hats on and faces slightly shaded in the afternoon sun. Alfred and Surik on the left and Otto all by himself on the right.
So this is the last photo with your friends, Otto?
Yes, it was. It was a beautiful day. That was taken when we first arrived at Castle Kazes. We were all so happy and excited. So that night, when the walls came crumbling down, Otto, was the last time you ever saw Helga and Sika?
No.
That's why I called you here. Did you run into them that night in some other location?
No, and yes.
Explain, Otto. I did see them in another location, but not that night. When, Otto?
Years later, in 1965.
It all came clear to me with those words, 1965. That's why I'm here. Otto could tell that Charles finally put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Otto, was it Kecksburg?
Now you're thinking, young man.
That's impossible.
Improbable, not impossible, Charles. It was that night I found out the results of all our efforts some 40 years earlier. The different divisions of RISA were kept so separate and secret, no one knew what was going on.
Sieger knew, though.
He's the one that solved the whole dilemma facing our world of today and the world of 1945.
What dilemma, Otto?
A rip in the space-time continuum.
Slow down, Otto.
I held his hand and settled him down, reaching for a glass of water on the dresser, and aided him in giving him a drink.
Thanks, Charles.
Where were we? 1965, Otto, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and some sort of tear in the fabric of space and time?
Yes, yes, I remember that light, like that night like it was yesterday.
Hot and muggy, but a clear sky.
Yes, yes, I remember that night like it was yesterday. Hot and muggy, but a clear sky. Stars everywhere. I was working for NASA in the Advanced Rocketry Division when I got the call. It was my chief engineer. He told me to get dressed that a car was on her way to pick me up. I asked why, and he said I'd be briefed on the way.
On the way to what? I asked.
To a crash site, he replied.
I immediately wake up, and before I knew it, I was strapped into a military black helicopter and flown to Pennsylvania. To Pennsylvania. Kecksburg, to be exact.
What happened then, Otto?
I remember walking through the woods with a military escort and two guys in black suits. The proverbial men in black. I could see a faint orange glow in the distance. The proverbial, I was so focused on this glow, I tripped over a fallen log. Some soldiers helped me up, and we slowly approached the ominous orange glow. As I peered around the large elm tree trunk, my mind was frozen in shock.
It was the bell, Charles.
The old man started coughing so much that the nurse came in his room to check on his status.
Please, sir, you must finish soon. Mr. Cerny needs his rest.
It's okay, young lady, responds Otto. She turns and exits the room. I was filled with fear that the young nurse would force me to leave the room, and I would not hear the rest of this fantastic tale. Otto looked around the room, making sure no one was in close proximity.
I will never forget the vril symbols that encircled the two counter-rotating drums. The SS had them engraved into the body of the second Kronos model. I stared at those markings for months, Charles. The only thing that brought me out of my state of shock was an argument that broke out between a local farmer and some military guards just across the crash site.
Americans. In Nazi Germany, they would have been shot.
Good thing we're not in Nazi Germany, eh, Otto?
Yes, Charles, it absolutely is.
Go on, Otto.
What stood out in my mind was the reference to the vril markings. I remembered Ed Walter's story. Ed described similar unidentifiable markings and the identical orange glow. We could not get close to it for a while. The outer shell superheated. Finally, the military managed to load it onto a flat deck and get it the hell out of there. Within hours, the bell and the rest of us were all airlifted to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That's when I saw Colonel Seeger again. In the secrecy of a top-secret hangar, 20 of us were standing, encircling the bell, when the deep knock of steel rang out. We all stepped back. The entrance hatch doors slowly opened, and a flash of vapor expelled from the craft. I saw his boots first. I'll never forget those shiny black Nazi boots of Seeger's. It was soon followed by his slender, muscular frame. His hand and arm extended out behind him, holding a small female hand. I knew instantly who it was. Helga. Her beauty unforgettable. I'm sure she managed to steal all our attentions for a moment or two, despite the historic events unfolding. I shouted out, "Seeger! Helga!" Seeger shouted back, "Otto Cerny, is that you?" He quickly jumped to the hangar floor, catching Helga shortly afterwards. I ran towards them. No one there could figure out what was going on. I grabbed them both and embraced them in a huge hug. "My God, you guys!" Seeger asked me where he was. I told him. He stood in silence for a moment, then erupted into jubilation. "I knew it!" It was only a short time ago they left war-torn Germany. To Seeger and Helga, it was not 20 years, but hours since their journey began. Our reunion was shattered by the men in black. The two mysterious individuals referred to themselves by some code. I can't remember exactly what it was, not names but letters, J, K, or something like that. These two men whisked us away to I don't know where. It was another secret complex deep in the Arizona desert. "Why, Otto? Why did they take you there?" I could tell Otto was getting physically weaker, his breaths getting shallower with each passing hour. "That's when I found out about the rip in the fabric of space and time. They brought us to an observatory embedded in a cliff wall. Large steel shields covering the observatory window began to creep open. I was brought back to images of the cliff face observatory of the Henge and the night Alfred died. The shield was fully raised, and that's when he spoke." "Who spoke?" "The man in black. M, that was it. They called him M. He turned to Seeger and said, 'I think you and your Nazi buddies may have caused this.' He then pointed to the desert floor below." "My God, Rudolf, what is it?" Helga gasped. Below them, a captivating sight is revealed. A shimmering blue mass lights the desert floor. It breathes as though it is alive, in and out, pulsating, seeming to grow with every unworldly breath. "It looks like the gravitational field effects of red mercury. But how?"
"Yes, Colonel, we think so too. Sporenberg spilled all the beans to the Russians when he was captured.
That bastard killed everybody."
"I know, Colonel, but here's the problem. That spatial distortion we're looking at will keep expanding, and at its present rate, my physicists tell me, it will reach a catastrophic energy level in a..."
Try again.
"I know, Colonel, but here's the problem."
It's because this is the M, right?
"I know, Colonel, but here's the problem. That spatial distortion we're looking at will keep expanding, and at its present rate, my physicists tell me it will reach a catastrophic level in 24 hours. We need to find out what's causing it and figure out how to stop it. Any ideas from you, Colonel? Otto? Or, for that matter, Mrs. Velhelm?"
The Colonel stood in silence for a moment. You could tell by the look on his face that the light turned on.
"I got an idea what might be causing this."
"Don't keep us in suspense, Colonel. Please share."
The Colonel turned to Otto. "What was Surik doing with Dr. Eckert? Did he ever give you an idea?"
"Not me, Colonel, but before Alfred died, Surik told him Eckert was stealing red mercury."
"That's it.
What, Rudolf?"
"Helga, Eckert must be trying to escape."
"What?"
"He's trying to escape right now as we speak."
"What's that mean, Colonel?" asked M.
"One aspect of red mercury's radiation was something Eckert called spooky physics.
Action at a Distance, he named it. All the red mercury created was formed during the same process. A function of this aspect was that every subatomic particle was connected. They were all linked together somehow. What you did with one subatomic particle affected all others, regardless of distance apart. The possibilities in communications and weapons applications were endless.
Cut to the chase, Colonel, M barks out.
Eckert must have created a field generator in secret. That's what he was up to.
Up to what, Colonel? Otto nervously asked.
I thought he was stalling the delivery of the Vril weapon. I still don't know exactly what the weapon was. I think Eckert had no weapon to deliver. Instead, he must have been planning this escape all along. He figured out these aspects of red mercury about 6 months prior to that night in April of 1945.
So that crazy bastard is responsible for this?
No, Otto, we all are, the Colonel regretfully responds.
So he's trying to get out of Risa, is he? The man in black interjects.
He steps closer to the observatory window, folds his hands behind his back and says,
So what are we going to do, Colonel?
Our journey through time has caused a shear in the fabric of space and time. We came through, Helga, but Eckert isn't through yet. My God, we did the same thing Anquil's civilization did. I must go back, Em. This will destroy the world. We'll be erased from time like this world was never here if I don't stop Eckert.
What do you plan to do when you get there, and how do you get there back then? What do you plan to do when you get there, and how do you get there back? And how do we get you back there, Colonel?
The bell can get us back, Em. The bridge through space and time is still open. If we act fast, I can get back. No.
The bell can get us back, Em. The bridge through space-time is still open. If we act fast, I can get back and stop what I started.
M stood silent, pacing back and forth, never taking his eyes off the phenomena below.
You heard the man? Get cracking.
The room springs to life, everyone running and screaming orders. Helga grabs Zika's arm.
Rudolf, I was part of this. I'm coming with you.
I'd have it no other way, my love, he says while staring deep into her scared blue eyes.
You realize, Helga, we may not survive this trip.
I know, Rudolf, but I'd rather die with you than without you.
So be it, my love, he whispers into her ear.
The Colonel turns and takes command of the room.
Otto, my old friend, get us back to 1945.
What's your plan, sir?
I'll land outside Castle Kazetz, Otto. The bell's gravitational field should act as a doorway to Eckert's lab.
Are you sure of that, Colonel?
No, Otto, but things are clear to me now. I remember the night Alfred died, I saw sequence lights coming from Eckert's complex. They were in exact sequence with the bell's static discharges. Our test that night activated the red mercury Eckert stole.
That must have woke him up, sir.
I doubt it, Otto. He knew what might happen, he expected it. That's why he wasn't at those first bell tests. I suspect him and General Kamala were in cahoots with each other. I guess I'll find out soon enough.
M interjects.
Zeger, you're talking about a singularity between Eckert's generator and the bell?
Yes, M, they must be in close enough proximity to each other, or it will not work.
What if you're wrong? M asked.
Well, my man in black, then we're all screwed.
I understand, Colonel. Follow me, we must get moving now.
We were taken away once again in the same mysterious black helicopters we arrived in, Charles. Hours later, we were back at Wright-Patterson in that secret hangar, and I said my goodbyes to my long-lost friends. I remember Seeger telling me that he would have the element of surprise. He was going into battle again, where he knew he belonged. You could see the excitement in his gleaming blue eyes and childlike grin. The bell looked as ominous as it did some 20 years earlier. The scene hauntingly familiar. Dozens of lab coats scurrying around and a feeling of cloak and dagger in the air.
We got to get the bell outside to launch, the Colonel yelled to me.
That's when the man they called M took over.
Okay, Zika, we'll do this right outside this hangar, but we'll bring a great deal of attention to our mission.
No choice, M. Your call, Colonel.
Seeger and Helga then turned to me, Charles.
We embraced for the last time and they entered the bell.
We moved it to an isolated spot on the nearest runway, and Seeger activated the drive system. Slowly the bell's counter-rotating drums turn faster with every revolution. I watched it rise high into the clear summer night sky and then explode into a brilliant ball of light, and it was gone.
What happened to the desert location, to the tear in the time-space continuum?
Yes, I'm getting to that, Charles. Patience.
Otto began coughing again, trying to catch his breaths.
Otto, relax. Take it easy. Nice deep breaths, old-timer.
His body calms down from the intense shaking he just experienced.
My God, Charles, I thought I was going to kick the bucket.
Both men laugh, following by a few more coughs from the old bedridden man. M took me back to the Arizona desert location that held the destructive force threatening the world. The bizarre phenomena was no longer a small distortion in the visual field, but extended at least 1 mile in diameter and growing ever skywards. The clouds were rolling violently like the surface of a deep stormy sea. Lightnings filled the sky. My very soul became filled with fear. What if Seeger failed, or it was too late to stop these forces of nature?
Obviously, Otto, he stopped it, otherwise we wouldn't be here, right?
You're right, Charles. I stood there silent, with M by my side. Only moments passed. They seemed to last forever. Suddenly, in a blinding flash of light, the sky exploded. The cliff face shook. We were all knocked to the floor. When I got up again, the sky was calm and the desert floor was dark as night.
I remember M saying, "Well, Otto, looks like they did it."
Thank God.
Those were the last words that strange man ever said to me.
My debriefing was more of a threat. They said they would kill me, Charles. I could tell that Otto's mind was slipping in and out of the world around him and his past.
"It's okay, Otto. No one's going to hurt you, Carl. Hurt you.
It's okay, Otto. No one's going to hurt you. Calm down." I held his hand again. The old man became more disoriented and panicked. He started to yell out strange German commands. The nurses rush into the room.
"My God, what's going on in her?" The nurse shouts out.
"Nothing," I respond. "He was just telling me about his life story."
"Please wait out in the hallway, sir."
I cower like a scared child and take cover in the hallway until Otto regains his senses. I peer through the doorway at the weathered old man. Otto lays still, sleeping and relaxed. He looks at peace. I wait patiently in the chair at his bedside. I drift in and out of sleep, hoping I would find him awake and ready to fill me in on what happened to Seeger and Helga. I once again woke. This time the sunrise was just breaking. I stretch and rise from my chair. Otto's still sleeping. I look at my watch.
I need a coffee.
The young man, exhausted from his restless night's sleep, makes the journey to the cafeteria, located just off the main entrance to the hospital. As I'm sitting there, rubbing my eyes and yawning, staring into the bright morning sun, I look down at my steaming cup of joe, only for a brief moment. My walking trance interrupted by two silhouettes that suddenly appear in the distance of the parking lot. I sit transfixed on the two shadowy figures that become more defined with every passing second. A man and woman. My mind focuses on the woman's perfect hourglass figure. Tight is her dress, hugging every curve of her body. I'm instantly awakened by my pounding pulse and gaze at the two as they pass into the hospital's entrance. I give my head a shake and take another sip of my coffee.
"Man, I could use a smoke," I whisper under my breath.
Gulp the last of my coffee and make my way outside.
Something hauntingly familiar about the woman that just walks through his UFO-obsessed mind.
I stumble and bumble for my smokes, but still I keep replaying these two strangers passing by like my mind won't let it go. Why, I wonder?
Must be my lack of sleep and her hot ass.
As I drag on my smoke...
I am.
Why, I wonder. Must be my lack of sleep and her hot ass. As I drag on my smoke and pace back and forth, my mind seems to recall the male figure. Not that I'm gay or anything, but something. The two together, their faces shadowed by their hats, their walk and postures that of distinction. Who were they, I wondered? It's then I freeze in my tracks. A slow motion, frame by frame memory plays in my mind. What triggered me to the possibilities was the blinding glimpse of the woman's blonde locks as she turned into the entrance. Helga and Seeger? No, impossible. I take no chances. You never know. I'm through the doors before my burning cigarette hits the ground. I run to the main elevator, frantically pressing the button. Shit, just my luck, breakfast rush. I wait like 10 minutes for the damn lift. Again, I find myself frantically pressing the fifth floor button. I peer up and watch the numbers change. 1, 2, 3, 4, finally 5, the doors open. I jet out of the elevator into the hallway, turn left and see a large crowd of nurses and doctors buzzing in and out of Otto's room.
Code blue, room to 525,
screams over the intercom system. I'm pushed aside by a group of nurses and orderlies rushing by with a crash cart. My excitement and feeling of almost having the proof wash away with these occurring events. The chaotic scene seems to calm down very quickly. I stand in the nurse's station waiting to see if Otto was okay or not. I see the nurse from earlier that night. Excuse me, ma'am. Oh, you again. How's Otto Cerny? He died. She can see the shock and dismay come across Charles's face. Sir, are you okay? I stood quiet looking into her brown eyes, not able to say anything. Then the reporter in me sprang to life. I remembered the diary and the pictures in Otto's desk. If I could just get those, at least that's some proof. Excuse me, miss. Can I go into the room and collect my things and say goodbye to an old friend? Well, we're not supposed to. Only for family members and two family members we've just in there when Otto went into cardiac arrest. Otto had no family left. They said they were his niece and nephew. Follow me. As we walked to room 525, I began to quiz the young women on the niece and nephew. Where did Otto's family go? I'm not sure. I lost track of them when we were attending to Otto. Yes, of course. I look up and down the hallway trying to catch sight of these mysterious two family members. Could they be the same two I witnessed moments ago? Could it be the two time travelers Otto made me aware of? My questions to the nurse became more direct. I guess they never told you their names, did they? Yeah, they did, but I can't remember now. We crossed the threshold of Otto's room, and I pressed the nurse harder. Was it Seeger or Helga? No, that wasn't it. It's then I see the lifeless body of Otto covered by a white sheet. I become deathly quiet and almost fearful to approach the area. Okay, sir, do your business and then leave. Thank you. She walks and turns towards the door. Turns and walks towards the door. I position myself next to Otto's body. I'm between the window and his bed. The dresser with my objective in it just beneath my view. I'm jolted back to reality by the nurse's voice. Now I remember their names. Rudy and Kitty. Good American names. Absolutely, I respond. She turns and disappears. I check to see if the coast is clear. I reach in and grab the diary, move it discreetly into my coat breast pocket, then slip out of the room to the elevator as quick as I can. It's not until I arrive in the lobby and make my way outside that I feel more secure enough, that I feel secure enough to view the diary. I open the small leather book. In doing so, the old tattered photo falls and twirls to the ground. I bend at the knees and crouch to retrieve it. Staring back at me is the back of the photo. I noticed written in black ink and an almost calligraphy-style handwriting. Perfect, if you ask me. Definitely a woman's. I stand, bring the back of the photo and the writing into view, and begin to read out loud.
tell our old friend's story. Yours truly, Rudolf Seeger and Kitty Waters. P.S. Hitler never died. He just hasn't shown up yet. The most amazing fact of these words was not just that they were on the photo, but a date was left in the same handwriting and ink. Still fresh by the evidence of smudges, it was today's date.
Like, right now?
Impossible. I stare across the parking lot directly into the blinding morning sun, hoping to catch a glimpse of the two travellers, but to no avail. I stand there for some time, constantly looking at the picture of Otto and his friends. Reading the back and nervously tapping the photo in my hands, the possibilities and the impossibilities race through my mind. The tale too fantastic for even me to believe, but I'm sure I just took true testimony and witnessed some part of this truth. I walk away from the hospital to my car. I form into the driver's seat, exhausted, confused. Still one question pounding through my mind. Who the hell is Kitty Waters?
That concludes The Glock by Kelsey Bowman.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.